Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. I'm your host Ace, and joining me are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozugos.
How?
In today's episode, we're talking about Sinduati Noir, a series that's only a handful of episodes in. Since this is based on a video game, we decided to cover it using the three-episode rule, like we did during the first season of this very podcast. Like previous podcasts about new shows, I won't be as detailed in my synopsis, so do check out the anime if we've piqued your interest. It was produced by 8-Bit, the studio behind That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime, The Fruit of Grisaia, and a bunch of stuff. Sinduality Noir currently has a MyAnimalist score of 6.83. This is based on the game that's not actually out yet, called Sinduality Echo of Ada, developed by Game Studio. Yes, that's the Game Studio who's working on it. And set to be published by Bandai Namco in 2023 for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series consoles. Game Studio also made Infinity Strash Dragon Quest The Adventures of Dai, in case you're wondering. My summary for Sinduality Noir is: a scavenger finds a deactivated robot in some ruins and goes on a quest to find out what its deal is. Atura, what do you have?
After scoring the lowest points historically in the Drifter test, Kanata has given up on his dreams, though finding a Type Zero Magus might just give him the boost he needs.
And Gozugos?
In a world that is post-apocalyptic, but not really, where everyone has an AI slave and a mech suit, a boy is going to become a man down there.
Okay. The first episode opens with Kanata and Tokyo, not that Tokyo, in a museum, seemingly abandoned for many years, given the vegetation growth and holes in the ceiling. Kanata is told to get a move on, as it's just started to rain and they don't want to risk being infected, which has the form of a woman.
I have a bone to pick. I'm pretty sure it's basically pronounced Tokyo because it doesn't have a Y.
I thought they were pronouncing it Tokyo.
No, they aren't. It's just me being silly.
As they're discussing what to do, they're attacked by xenomorph Beyblades, but Tokyo's butler brings the D.Va mech from Overwatch to rescue them.
This is sent to like course synopsis.
It wasn't pink.
A part of it was pink, thank you.
Was it?
You don't know what D.Va skin she was using.
The mechs are referred to as coffins, and the butler, it turns out, is a magus. This information was not presented at the start of the show.
I also did not understand what was happening when he was doing the stuff he was doing.
I also was curious, why did they rip off their ponchos when they were generated by the helmets they were wearing? Just turn off the helmet.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
They both ripped them off.
They wouldn't have the same coolness factor if they didn't rip it off.
They didn't look cool, they were ripping a poncho.
Well, maybe the poncho disintegrates, because otherwise they would have like a big abundance of clothes.
Well, I assume it disintegrates when you deactivate the helmet.
It doesn't have the button to deactivate it.
Okay. They manage to escape and drive for 24 hours with Kanata pounding energy drinks, finally arriving at the domed city of Rocktown. They go to sell an AO crystal at a market, which they got from somewhere we didn't see, and they clash with Aventure, a rival team of scavengers. The assembled crowd refers to Tokyo as a lone wolf, despite the two people stood with him. But since there are 8 members of Aventure, I suppose I'll let them off.
Please, come on. Let's not give the robot slaves any rights. He's only with one person.
I mean, in this case, even the human was basically a slave, since Tokyo is a lone wolf.
Tokyo takes his earnings to the bar, while Kanata carries the magus back to their workshop, where he promptly removes its clothes.
By accident, goddammit, don't perpetuate the problem.
Yeah, what? Like, he's used to the button materializing clothes, not disappearing them.
Yeah, if he wanted to get her undressed, he'd have just ripped the clothes off, not deactivated.
Yeah, exactly, but you see, that's how we do it here?
Like, he was like, what the fuck, your button makes clothes disappear? I don't have that.
He wants to check her for blue schist contamination. that's what it's called, but is interrupted by the two members of Aventure, Ellie and Aang, who followed him back. They discover the quote-unquote naked Magus in the back room, and while he's explaining it, it wakes up and says, "Next time I'll take you to paradise."
Did he just skip the scenes of debauchery? Where everyone's yes. like, gambled. Like you were just pretending that didn't happen.
I said he went to the bar. Ellie, who obviously fancies Kanata, storms off before crying in Ange's arms. The Magus, meanwhile, has a shower and dresses before saying it doesn't remember its own name. So he didn't speak to the Magus, it was just showers that way. See you when you come out.
Well, naturally, that's how you speak to naked ladies.
Not a lady.
Like naked Maguses?
While it talks to Kanata, he says that he wants to go to a city called Histoire, which existed before the Tears of the New Moon, the apocalyptic event that caused this post-apocalyptic scenario. He casually mentions that Histoire is sometimes called Paradise, so we're only 12 minutes into this series and we already know what's going to happen.
Thank you for watching, everyone.
He takes it to see Maria, someone who's really good with machines, hoping that she will know what's wrong with the Magus. Maria, it turns out, is also Ellie's sister, has heard that Kanata had sex with the Magus. After checking the Magus over and getting it some new clothes, they're interrupted by an E-alert. I don't know why it's called an E-alert instead of just an alert, but as Rocktown comes under attack from the same kind of aliens we saw earlier. They break into the city, and Aventure turns up to fight them off, spotting an unexploded missile fired by Tokyo earlier. So this is one of the same aliens that they fought at the museum. But Tokyo shoots it and it explodes.
Yeah, because we have to hide the evidence that anyone did anything wrong.
Now, I wrote this note and then later I came and wrote the next note. So somehow, Tokyo and Kanata were followed for hundreds of miles by one of these creatures, which somehow brought thousands more. And then later I realized, on second thoughts, a canister attached to their truck was pierced and started leaking. So apparently it leaked the whole way back, the thing that these aliens managed to follow. And, you know, thousands more joined it. Kanata returns to the workshop and gets in his own coffin, the mech suits, and immediately gets knocked over by a boss that had attacked Ellie's coffin. Now, Ellie refers to it as a boss. It's not like me saying, oh, it looks like a boss creature. No, it's just a big one that a character in this anime says is a boss.
Yeah, they knew you were going to say that anyway, so they just did it.
The coffin isn't functioning properly because he doesn't have a Magus like all the others do, but gasp and shock, the Magus he left behind at the workshop, the one he's been hanging around with for 15 minutes of this episode, is a Magus!
Oh my god.
And she uses a fireball spell. I don't know.
It climbs into the rear of the coffin, classification comes up, noir. Kanata kills the boss, it's super impressive.
Well, can we really say it was Kanata that killed the boss?
Kanata's coffin kills the boss. The episode ends with Kanata deciding to call the Magus Noir.
Meaning they will, from now on, go on like cop dramas and both wear trench coats. It will be a Noir.
Talking in third person.
Series.
No, wait, yeah, second person?
That. Have a inner monologue.
Overextend metaphors. The next episode begins with our protagonists looking at Kanata's damaged coffin, which nearly couldn't keep up with what Noir made it do. Tokyo posits that it's a Type Zero, an Amazian Magus from before the collapse.
An Asian? Amazian. I think they're all Asians.
I knew you'd flag up on that word. Maria turns up at the workshop to give them some spare parts and suggests they return to the museum where they found Noir to see if its coffin is still there, or better yet, its memories. So we cut to the museum, you know, 24-hour drive later, where they find the coffin almost immediately. They confirm that the coffin is Amazian in origin, so Noir might well be a Type Zero. The only information the coffin has, however, on its databanks is the name Pascal.
Considering these are called coffins, does that technically make Pascal a vampire?
There is also a digital camera under the seat, though, but it didn't look like a digital camera, so I had to go through and edit my notes after we found out it's a digital camera. Meanwhile, back at Maria's workshop, Ellie and Aang, they're picking up Ellie's repaired coffin when a loud noise catches their attention. It's a big truck with a symbol on it showing that it belongs to the Nebolo family from another city. They witness Range? It's spelled Range, know. So it really throws my pronunciation off. Witness Range exiting the vehicle.
Yeah, Range. They pronounce it Range.
Avenger's former second in command. The protagonists, meanwhile, return to Rocktown, presumably after another 24-hour drive, and the guys go to get drunk while the two Jesses head back to the workshop. Range arrives at the bar shortly after Tokio and Kanata, and we find out that he was allegedly exiled for stalking Maria. Also, he has severe tertiary antagonist energy to get red hair in the shape of flames and skull necklace.
Basically, we can call him Ganondorf and everyone will understand.
You're not wrong. Tokio having any of his mess, and Range leaves in a huff when Avenger's current leader arrives and doesn't recognize him.
As you do.
Kanata heads back to the workshop and conducts repairs on his coffin. And then the next day, Kanata, Ellie, and Aang have to go looking for Noir, who left while Kanata was asleep, to try and get the camera working. While asking around for someone to repair the camera, Range spots Noir all by itself, and upon learning that it's Kanata's Magus, offers to help fix the contraption. It's led into the Nebolo truck, and upon learning this, Kanata gives chase. On the truck, Noir is in the cabin with some other Maguses, and one of them suggests charging the camera, and it does so, demonstrating how to do it to Noir. Suddenly, an alarm goes off, and we find Tokio and Kanata's coffins atop a big rocket heading straight for the truck. I just thought that was hilarious when I saw that.
One thing I found funny is that Range has like this necklace of things that look like the grimacing emoji.
When they were flying the rocket, I had a traumatic flashback to Tao Pai Pai from Dragon Ball flying on his tree log.
Actually, yeah, I can see that now. Tokio fights some nobodies that are sent out, but Range attacks Kanata himself. Noir, when she hears this, blasts open the door, and as Tokyo's coffin is sent off of a bridge, it jumps inside, and together they defeat Range. Again, super impressive. Range makes his escape, but so does the mysterious Magus who helped Noir charge the camera, who says
Wait,
that...
Wait, I'm sorry, you just said Range instead of Range.
I don't care. Who says that Noir reminds it of someone. But it turns out after all of that, there are no photos saved on the camera anyway. The episode ends with Kanata activating Noir's extended warranty. Registering as its master. And we finally get an end credits song, because we didn't in the first episode, and it's fine. The third episode opens with Kanata repairing his coffin again, before Tokio comes in and tells him that he needs to get laid.
You know, as friends do. Ace, I really think you need to get laid.
We finally get an opening title sequence. The song is decent, and while the animation starts a bit slow, I think it's overall pretty decent.
I was really shocked when it started because it caught me off guard. Since it hadn't happened the other times, it was just surprising. But yeah, I agree. I kind of liked it. And I liked the animation.
We open back on Ellie, who's driving to pick up Kanata for a date. I mean, a job. However, upon arriving at the workshop, she finds Noir by itself, along with a message saying... I will go to the Desire next with Kanata, and we will enjoy the boing boing, so please take care of me. However, the subtitles don't make much more sense. Took Kanata to Desire for a bit to play with boing boings, take care of the rest of what? I mean, boing boings is pretty self-explanatory.
Like, and take care of the house or something.
Ellie is aghast and tells Noir that it doesn't need to know what boing boings are. And we pick up from context that Desire is probably a brothel. Ellie decides that they're going to pick up Kanata along the way to do the job and loads his coffin onto her truck. We cut to Desire, with domes shaped like breasts, and learn that it's a place where any desire can be fulfilled. Like, they're clearly shaped like breasts, not just me, right?
Well, I had to go back and look at it, but now that I see it, I can kind of see it again. Like, there's definitely the nipple action.
Just watch out for those pointy bits.
The areolas are a different color. I mean, the pointy bits of the towels are a different color. So Tokyo shoves Kanata into a brothel and then goes to find another place to have fun, only to be followed by his magus, which is cock-blocking him for some reason. Meanwhile, on Ellie's truck, she explains that she and Kanata have been friends since childhood. Their discussion is cut short by them encountering a magus on the road, who they pick up and learn its name is Shni, and it's going to Desire to look for its master. Coincidentally, Noir looks like the goddess that Shni's master is looking for. Back at Desire, Kanata is waiting for his turn when the person sat next to him, who is obviously Shni's master, says that it's his first time too, which is played as such a shock that we get an ad break.
Just gave you some time to really, you know, settle with that thought.
This guy with his eyes covered, oh my god, his first time, oh, I need to step away.
Were you recording my screen while I was watching
it? I mean, this guy we've just met, I can't believe
it. Him? No way, we won't allow that.
Suspension of disbelief just blown away. After chatting, it turns out that this guy is looking for a goddess to take him to paradise. So he's literally looking for Noir, because that's the first thing she said in the first episode.
And also she resembles his goddess.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just getting more and more clear that, you know, we're in the right path, obviously.
Back in the truck, they detect some monsters swarming towards Desire, so Shni takes over driving while Ellie gets in her coffin to fight them off. In the brothel, Kanata's number is called, but the alarm goes off. Then Shni and Noir come in, confirming that the bloke was Shni's master.
Dun dun dun, no way. Oh my god. Shocker.
After Kanata and Noir leave to fight it to help with the fight, the still unnamed guy mentions that the goddess is a key before deciding to join the fight. Oh, and he was there under false pretenses.
So he wasn't it wasn't his first time?
I mean, it probably was, but he wasn't there for that. He was there to find the goddess.
Oh, okay. I was worried that our entire dramatization was for nothing.
Outside, that's just what happens with Mr. No Name taking out loads very, very easily. Later, Ellie is finally able to explain that she's there to get Kanata for a job. And then inside Desire, Tokyo is still running, but now he's running with his magus instead of away from it. And they're having fun. The end of the third episode. So I can't ask, was this a good adaptation? Because the game isn't out yet. So did it make you want to play Sinduality Echo of Ada?
So I think for me it's a yes. I quite like the humor of the anime. And I'm hoping they'll have something similar in the game. But I don't see that happening. So it's an interesting premise that I want to explore.
Goes.
So, like, I watched some of the gameplay, and the game looks more gritty than the anime.
By gameplay, do you mean the one trailer that's available?
No, there is, like, gameplay footage.
Gameplay? Because these are just clips from the trailer.
I know, right?
And it looks like gameplay!
They've just put the same trailer, like, three times.
Right? I'm not crazy.
I never dislike anything. I've disliked that video.
I don't know, I see different gameplay bits. But, like, even visually, the game looks more gritty than the anime. Like, it's more desaturated.
Yeah, it does a better job of presenting a post-apocalyptic world than the anime did.
For me, I probably would have played it anyway, because I love mech games, but yeah, this certainly made me want to add it on the wish list. So, based on the first three episodes, is it a Yata, Nani, or a Baka, Arturo?
I think for me this was definitely Yata, although it did have some mistakes every once in a while, like, you know, the boing boing entire sequence. I quite enjoyed it. I thought the audio, the like jokes are really funny, the narrative was interesting, and I'm really excited to see what comes next. And maybe even more so, I kind of want to be familiarized with the world to feel how it would be going from this, which was our first exposure to sensuality, to the game whenever it releases.
And Gus?
It's a yata for me. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yata from me. It started off a bit slow, but third episode was very strong, I thought. So, will you continue watching Sensuality Noir?
I think for me, absolutely, I will. I showed a couple of scenes to my wife, and I got her laughing, so I'm pretty sure I got her on board to watch it too.
I might, if I find it.
Well, it's already on my recently watched on Disney Plus list, so might as well keep watching it while it's on there. But yeah, I really enjoyed it, so even if it was like on a different streaming service, I'd probably kept watching it.
Yeah, it's definitely really good. Like, I quite enjoyed it, and I was really happy with the animation. I thought it was really pretty and really crisp colors. I'm quite shocked, actually, at the anime score it has right now.
Yeah, below 7. That did surprise me after watching it, yeah.
Well, there's slavery.
Yeah, but, you know, who cares?
I mean, when I saw it, it was like, to me, it was hilarious. But I saw people, like, being offended by people imprinting themselves on other people. Especially because it's on the neck.
Okay, I suppose I can see that. It's not something that jumped immediately to my mind. I mean, the Rangay's one seemed to have free rein to do whatever, just go and buy some carrots and eat them, even though they don't appear to need food. They certainly don't need sleep, because one of them specifies that they don't need sleep.
I mean,
not only that, the way that he gets followed, Tokyo gets followed by his, also shows that they have free will, because he clearly demanded to be left alone.
Yeah, it did. And did he ever get named, actually? The unnamed guy left his Magus, and it followed him.
Well, again, it didn't bother me. I think that just a lot of people don't understand context and will, like, take this one bit out of context and, you know, make a big deal out of it. Because it's not, at least so far, it's not presented in a way that, I don't know, would suggest that they are actually slaves.
Yeah, it's not like they're oppressed against their own will, as far as we can see.
I mean, Noir wants to stay with Kanata.
Yeah, and that was before imprint in the contract.
Before the extended warranty, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we've reached the end of our podcast. Thank you for joining me, Artura and Guzguz.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrin.com, find us on social media, or listen to the Greencast podcast. Until next time, game on.